60 years ago, it's hard to believe, 9 families came together to do something good in this community. They came together to do something that would expand the kingdom of Jesus in this community. They came to establish a church. What Jesus would later go on to refer to as his ecclesia, which is an assembly of Jesus' followers, right? It's not a building. A church is not a building. This is so important to understand. The church of Jesus is a gathering. It is actually a movement of people who gather together because they are people who have embraced Jesus' view of our world, and they have embraced Jesus' mandate in our world. His view that Jesus has actually come into this world to seek and to save what has been lost, and his mandate, which is to go and to make disciples of all people, which means that Jesus expects his church to actually multiply his followers, that reaching people has been fundamental and it's been essential to the gathering of the church ever since the very beginning, because from the very beginning, Jesus has expected his people to be outward-facing people. People who are doing everything in their power to actually bring other people in, make people curious, invite people to participate, to show up in the midst of tragedy, to show up in the midst of heartbreak, to do whatever needs to be done, whatever it's going to take to actually create more Jesus followers, because Jesus is the light of this very, very dark world. And so from our earliest days as a church, we have been a gathering of Jesus followers that really have taken the angel's words seriously and literally. That Jesus is good news of great joy for all people. And for 60 years, we have been a gathering of followers of Jesus who are committed to not taking our eye off the mission that Jesus has given to us. The way that we said it in the early years was to extend the mission and ministry of the crucified and the risen Christ to all people, or now to simply bring Jesus into every relationship. And so in 1968, we built our first sanctuary, which we quickly outgrew. And so in 1979, just 10 years later, we built the building that many of you know as the chapel. And then in 1997, we built this room that all of us are in right now. And somewhere along the way, because of generosity and vision and a tenacious commitment to embracing Jesus' view and his mandate in our world, each of you, you walk through those doors. You walk through as a follower, a returner, a seeker, or a skeptic, someone with bad church experience or someone with no church experience, someone who had hard questions, someone who was going through a hard time. And faith was here. And those of us who were here, we were ready for you. In fact, we were waiting for you. In fact, even though we didn't know you, we were expecting you, because somewhere along the way, we discovered what hopefully you will someday discover if you have not discovered already, what the Apostle Peter was actually the first to discover more than 2,000 years ago, which is that you cannot imagine what's on the other side of saying yes to Jesus. Previously, in the first half of Here for Good, if you remember way back in September, we left Peter, the Apostle Peter, along with Jesus, in one of the fishing boats that Peter and his brothers used for fishing. They had been out all night fishing, and so now Peter, it's the next day, he is exhausted from this long, unproductive night. He wants to go home, and he wants to go to sleep, and he wants to eat, but Jesus has just asked Peter if he can finish teaching this message to this large group of people that are gathered on the beach listening to him. Jesus has just asked Peter if he can sit down in Peter's boat, and if Peter would mind pushing his boat off into the water just a little bit. Peter is tired because, again, he fished all night. He hasn't caught anything. He's just finished washing and drying his nets, which are still sitting on the beach over there just a little ways. And Peter is thinking about Jesus' request. And he decides, why not? I mean, after all, it's only a little bit of a disruption for Peter. It wasn't that big of a deal for him to just kind of sit there for a little bit longer and let Jesus teach the crowd that has gathered on the shore from the boat. And so Peter says, that's fine. You can get into my boat, and I'll push you offshore a little bit. And so Peter sits there, and he listens as Jesus teaches. And then Luke tells us that Jesus, as he sat down and he taught the people from the boat, eventually when Jesus finished speaking, he turns and he looks at Peter. And now Jesus is about to make his second request. Peter, however, is ready to go back to shore because, again, he's exhausted and he's thinking, finally, okay, the rabbi is done, which means I get to go home and I get to go to bed. But Jesus looks at Peter and he says to Peter, hey, Peter, remember this? I want you to put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Now, this second request, unlike the first request, is actually very disruptive. Because remember, Peter has already cleaned and has his nets hanging and drying on the beach. And so Peter very politely looks at Jesus and he says to Jesus, he says, okay, Master, listen, we've worked hard all night and we haven't caught anything. Right? In other words, we didn't catch anything when you're supposed to catch fish, right? We didn't catch anything. Maybe you don't understand this, Jesus. We didn't catch anything in ideal conditions. And now the sun is up, which means the water is heating up. And remember, there's that huge crowd of people on the beach. Peter's thinking, if all these people, if they see me do, Jesus, what you're asking me to do right now, they're going to think I'm crazy. But there was something about this rabbi from Nazareth. And so Peter pauses for a moment. He scans the crowd, right? He makes eye contact with his brother Andrew and looks at him, and he kind of shrugs his shoulders. And he looks back at Jesus and says, why not? Because you say so, Jesus. And Peter starts rowing the boat out to deep water. Now, I just want to pause here for a moment in the story, because if you're here today and you're new, you're kind of new to following Jesus, you're new to church, you're here and you still are trying to understand what all this means, I'm so glad that you're with us this weekend, especially on this weekend. You are always welcome here. You actually don't have to have all your questions and doubts answered before you start following Jesus. His first followers didn't. I certainly didn't. But what I want you to know this morning is that right now you are surrounded by people who would tell you that this is actually the best way to live, right? Now, it's scary that that's true, but I understand this way more than you think I do. It's scary because you don't know what's on the other side of saying yes to Jesus. And from where you're sitting right now, just like from where Peter was sitting at this point, it just didn't seem to make any sense. But again, here's what I would tell you and what so many people that you're sitting next to would tell you. This is definitely what Peter would tell you. You will never regret saying yes to the Savior who loves you. In fact, they would say that this is actually the best way to live. And here's why. Because believing a lot of stuff about God, right, believing a lot of stuff about Jesus, that is important and it's interesting. But when your belief actually leads to obedience, in fact, this is why Jesus' invitation to us in the 21st century is exactly the same as his invitation was to the people he was speaking to in the first century. His invitation has never been just believe me. His invitation has always been, I want you to follow me. Because when your faith actually moves you to action and it intersects with God's faithfulness, something is going to happen in you that cannot happen any other way. Now, for Autumn and I, our first because you say so moment as a couple, that was actually almost 31 years ago to the day from today when we were first married. In fact, if you came to one of the Here for Good meetings, you got to hear me tell our story as newlyweds, where we had our first encounter with what we would call a Jesus because you say so moment. For us, 31 years ago, at the beginning of a capital campaign just like this, ultimately, that resulted in the room that all of us are sitting in right now, this moment changed our lives, even ultimately our kids' lives, and it set us on a trajectory that 31 years later still guides our family every day. Back to Peter. Jesus Peter looks at Jesus and says to Jesus, "Because you say so, Jesus, I will let down the nets." Now, this is one of those places, especially if you're familiar with the Gospels, this is one of those places as you're reading that it's easy to forget that the Gospel narratives are greatly compressed, right? Here's what I mean by that. Jesus' ministry went on for about 3.5 years, but you can actually sit down and you can read all 4 accounts of Jesus' life in less than 3.5 hours. And so I want to slow down this story that we just read for a moment, because here's what this simple statement from Peter very practically meant. It meant that Peter now had to take his boat back to shore. He had to get a couple of guys off the shore with him. They had to go back and get the nets off the poles they were drying on the beach. They had to roll those nets up, carry them back to the boat that they were in. They had to get back into the boat. They had to row the boat back out to the sea. And don't forget, Jesus said to Peter that he wanted to go to the deep water, right? Which meant not just a few feet offshore, right? This meant that Peter actually had to row that boat out there for a while. He may have even had to put up a sail, right? This was not quick. The whole time, Peter is sitting there as he's doing this, and he's thinking to himself, this is a complete waste of time. This makes absolutely no sense given my current circumstances. I didn't catch anything last night. I'm not getting any sleep right now, which means I'm probably not going to be able to go to work tonight. And I'm out here in the middle of nowhere with this huge crowd of people looking at me, and in my boat is this rabbi who clearly knows nothing about fishing, and he wants me to do this. Now, eventually they get to their spot. Eventually they unfurl the nets, they let their nets down, and they sit there and they wait. And maybe Jesus and Peter sit in the boat and they talk about something that Jesus said, or maybe they just sit there and they stare at each other uncomfortably for a period of time. We don't know. Eventually, Peter does exactly what Jesus asked him to do. And Luke tells us that when Peter had done that, when he had let the nets down, just like Jesus had said, in the deep water, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. And suddenly Peter's concern goes away from the people who are out there on the beach staring at him to his nets right now in this moment in his boat. See, we hear this and we read this story and we think this is amazing, right? But Peter's thinking, listen, if I lose my nets, I lose my livelihood. Like, I can't just go and order a bunch of new nets from nets.com. Like, I have to make new ones, right? And that could literally take me a couple of months. Meanwhile, I can't fish. And I'm a fisherman, and so I can't make any money. And if I can't make any money, I can't take care of my family. How in the world am I supposed to provide for my family? How am I going to survive if my nets break? And so Luke tells us that Peter, in this moment, Peter signals his partners, this is James and John, who are in another boat, to come and help them. And they fill both boats so full that they begin to sink. In other words, the water actually starts coming over the side of the boat. And all of a sudden, Peter realizes in this moment, right, that the problem right now is actually the rabbi that's in my boat, because this has never happened before, right? Something extraordinary was taking place. And Luke tells us that when Peter sees all this and he puts 2 and 2 together, right, he's not grateful, he's actually terrified. And he falls at Jesus' knees and he looks at Jesus and he says to Jesus, come on, would you please get off my boat? Like, go away from me, Lord. I don't know who you are, but I know exactly who I am. I am a sinful man. And if I'm being punished for something that I did, I promise you, listen, if we make it back to shore with my boat and my nets intact, I promise you, whoever you are, I will go to the temple and I will sacrifice whatever I need to sacrifice in order to make things right between me and God, because clearly I have done something to make God angry with me. That's what's going on in Peter's heart right now. Now, meanwhile, like, as I picture Jesus in this moment, I think Jesus is just sitting there staring at Peter, smiling at him. Because see, Jesus actually knows what's on the other side of Peter's, "Because you say so, I'm going to do something that makes absolutely no sense to anybody, including me, except for possibly you." And so then Luke tells us that Jesus looks at Simon, don't miss this, and he says to Simon simply, "Don't be afraid." Now, the reason I love this statement so much is because Peter, right, and his brother Andrew and James and John, the guys who are in the other boat, right, that's who Luke is talking about. These 20-something guys, think about this, that we continue to name our children after to this day, 2,000 years after this event has taken place. These four guys, they don't even know their own story yet. Right? They have no idea that this was just the first of many times that Jesus would actually look at them and speak these same words to these same guys in this same boat on the same sea. But all of that is still to come. Meanwhile, in this moment, Jesus simply looks at Peter and he says to Peter, "Do not be afraid, because Peter, from now on, I tell you, you are going to fish for people," which made absolutely no sense to them at all, because this was not a metaphor for anything in their culture, but they were smart enough to know, with everything that they had saw just happen, this was no time to start asking questions. Their focus is simply getting their boat back to shore without sinking. And so Luke tells us when they finally managed to get the boat to the shore, they pulled their boats up on shore, and they were so full, they left everything, and they began to follow Jesus. And the rest is literally history, right? The rest is why you and I are here today, 2,000 years later. The rest is why you and I know the name of Jesus. It's why so many of us today have actually said yes to Jesus with our lives as well. And here's the parallel to today. This is why I wanted us to talk about this story today. Peter's day began with a financial decision, right? Think about it. "I didn't catch anything last night. I'm not getting any sleep right now, so I'm probably not going to be able to fish tomorrow night." His day began with a financial decision. But you know where Peter's day ended? It did not end with anything that had anything to do with money or fishing or anything like that. Those things ended up being the very last things on Peter's mind. And Peter's yes, right? Peter's yes, "because you say so" response to Jesus, in this moment, Peter's yes actually intersected with the faithfulness and the activity of Jesus in Peter's life. And from this moment, everything in Peter's life changed. In this moment, a movement was launched that would change and continues to change our world today. A movement that's changed my world. A movement that's changed many of your worlds as well. It's the reason why hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you over these last 12 weeks have been praying. It's why you've invited me into your homes. It's why so many of you have come out to a meeting here at church. It's why you have made a financial decision, a "because you say so" decision. A decision, this is so exciting to me, a decision for many of you that this is the first time you've ever done anything like this in your entire life. Right? It's why so many of us, think about this, we're actually getting ready to commit money today that we don't even have yet. We're getting ready to make a financial commitment for money that we haven't even earned yet, simply because we feel like this is what our Heavenly Father is telling us to do. For Autumn and I, 31 years ago, it's why even though we were literally newlyweds, and I had a huge credit card debt, I told you, those of you who came to this meeting, I told you that story. It's why we made a decision that other people in our lives at that point in our lives thought was absolutely crazy. It's why we made a commitment that day to give at least 10% of our gross household income to our church. And 31 years later, we have never not given at least 10% of our gross household income to our church. And there were many times in those 31 years where we would look at each other and where we would talk to each other and we would say, hey, are we crazy for actually doing this, knowing the circumstances that we're in right now? And both of us kept coming back to the same conclusion that even though we didn't know exactly how everything would work out, we knew that that was exactly what Jesus was asking us to do. And so we just kept saying, yes, yes, Jesus, because you say so, the answer is yes. And that's why this whole thing that we've had the privilege and honor of being a part of over these last 12 weeks, this is why this is such an honor for Autumn and I to be able to participate in and to share this moment with you as part of the life of our church. And again, I just want you to know, I would never ask you to do anything that we're not personally doing as well. Nobody is more grateful for this opportunity than we are. One of the things that I get to see about our church, simply because of my vantage point, and I hope this is something that you get to see someday. For many of you, this is your story, so you kind of know this. But today, somewhere, think about this, today, somewhere in this community, somewhere in your community, somewhere here in Michigan, today, somewhere either nearby or far away, today, somewhere, there's a college student, there's a high school student, there's a newly married couple. There's a recently divorced dad. There's a middle-aged widow who's just trying to figure out what future is now going to look like for her. Somewhere there's a struggling married couple. And they don't know you. And they don't know me. And they have never heard of us. But because of what you are about to do today, at some point in the future, we are going to intersect with their story simply because Jesus said so and you said yes. Now, here's the thing. 60 years is a long time. And if you're someone like me who studies these things, then you know that this is that season in the life of an organization, and this is that time and a season of life for someone in my season of life as a senior pastor. This is the time when oftentimes people step back, when they quit innovating, when they quit trying new things. This is when they quit learning. This is when both individuals and organizations stop trying to grow personally and professionally. I've seen that. I do not want to be a part of a church like that. I certainly do not want to pastor a church like that. And so we are not going to run the clock out, and we are not going to let the clock run out, because now more than ever in our world, what our community needs are outward-facing churches like Faith, churches that bring Jesus into every relationship, outward-facing churches that continue to embrace the tone and the posture of Jesus in their community. And the only way, listen, the only way to know what's on the other side of saying yes to Jesus, and this is something I discovered many, many years ago, I hope you have discovered it as well. The only way to ever find out on what's on the other side of saying yes to Jesus is by saying yes, because it's always better to find out than to miss out. And I don't want you to miss out.